Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 382 of the Roguecast, recorded August 9th, 2022. Fog-based Yak Robo. All right, we're back with another episode. I'm back from Gen Con.
Yep. I'm still here, having
Dave,
not gone to Gen Con.
Back in black.
Yes. And Nick's Back to the Future.
So yeah, we'll start off real quick with the news from games that have come in. Some notable stuff: Marvel Legendaries Black Panther expansion,
right?
The Wizard of Oz adventure book. This is the same people did the Princess Bride adventure book.
Oh, okay.
It's a new format of game. I don't actually know the game, but
yeah, it has like I don't know if it's quite a storytelling element, but there is like some sort of like kind of choose your own adventure thing that like that. Gives you different paths, I think, each game, so that, you know, you don't end up playing the same thing twice.
It's also very pretty. It's got a little green,
It looked really cool. I am a fan of The Wizard of Oz from back when I was a kid, and always liked it. That's a trippy, psychedelic movie.
We also got Star Wars Villainous, for those who have been liking the Disney Villainous or Marvel Villainous.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first Star Wars one. It's got, like, Darth Vader, General Grievous, who's Whiny Man from the few of the trilogies.
Who are we talking about?
Kylo Ren.
Oh.
Kylo Ren.
Yep.
I think a couple others.
That's a pretty good loadout to start with.
Yep.
Those are all pretty big villains. You know, they'll be like scraping it a little bit when they get to like Captain Phasma and
like Cad Bane. You can do Cad Bane.
There's a lot of good villains.
Yeah,
in
there
Star
are.
Wars.
A lot of
yep.
Star Wars.
Yeah, Star Wars has legit claim to good villains, and even some villains that were kind of weaker in some of the as presented, like Grievous, have had moments in other media and stuff.
In fact. There might be more better villains than there are heroes.
I don't know about that.
I don't know.
They've got Luke and Han and Leia and I would say Rey and Finn and Poe and so. They've got good heroes.
All right. I was trying to start controversy.
All right.
If you want to
convince me that Cad Bane is cooler than Mon Mothma, I'll accept it.
Cad Bane is cooler than Mon Mothma. Although with the Andor show,
I was going to say
she's finna come out swinging.
Yep. And K2SO is cool. I don't know, is he a villain or a hero?
K2SO is
villain turned hero.
Oh, okay.
He would get to count as a hero because that's all. In all the time we knew him, he was reprogrammed.
He's the Venom.
He's the Venom of the Star Wars Protector.
He's the Dark Protector of the Marvel Star Wars universe.
Yeah, sure.
But he doesn't get a blaster.
Yeah, K2SO Lethal Protector.
They're scary.
Does he want to eat your brains?
We've been playing the Nick and I have both been playing the Fallen Order game, and that brand of droid is some of the tougher opponents you'll run into.
So if you ran into the reprogrammed K2SO of Rogue One, you'd be like, blast him just to be sure.
I'm just saying, if you walk into a room and some of them are sleeping and some of them are not, do not knock the non-sleeping ones into the sleeping ones, because then you wake up an entire room of
It's like a dozen of them.
That's just a good rule for life.
It's not a fun time.
But Randy, your cool little cute droid that's with you, if you knock them down a little bit in their health, or actually quite a bit, the K2 droids, you can have him hack them, or slice, as they call it in Star Wars, and reprogram to work for you, which is pretty cool.
I think they should have a hero version of this game and do all droids, because they have, in Star Wars, their droids are some of their best characters.
Yeah. Well, there's never been anything that's droids only that was bad, so.
That's true.
You know, it was that cartoon, but even that, isn't that on Disney Plus now?
I think it might be.
I need to revisit it just to see.
Why don't you watch the Ewok cartoon while you're at it?
And that was like, those were like the cartoons of 83 or 84 or something like that. It's
how bad could they be?
Pretty bad.
Rough going.
Pretty bad.
Rough going. I tried at the time, you know. Yeah.
Are there musical endeavors in it?
When you're a kid, in the 80s, you take whatever they give you. Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends is an amazing representation of comics because it existed.
Yep. That's what you get.
And like, so like, I actually like the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon was pretty good, but it was like that was all the D&D you could get, and as far as like, unless you were just playing the game, there was no other D&D stuff except anywhere
still
else.
Like that.
It's kind of true, but we're about to get a movie.
That's right.
And
a TV show.
It's weird, though. The Spider-Man and Amazing Friends made, like, Firestar a main character that people should know, but she was forgotten again.
Well, nobody's ever heard of her. She was made up for the show.
That's true. But, I mean, she became a thing, and then no one remembered her, and then
they gave her a miniseries, which actually was pretty good, as I recall. I kind of liked that miniseries.
I never read it.
And then she was part of New Warriors.
Yeah.
And you're right, now she's gone.
Yeah.
I thought they were doing something with her. Isn't she on X-Men Island?
Is she a mutant?
She's a mutant. She's always been a mutant.
Yeah. I don't remember her.
Except on the original, except on the cartoon.
No, was she a mutant?
No.
Did she get bitten by a radioactive fire star?
I think they didn't explain. I think she just had powers.
Just fire.
But because Iceman was a mutant. She wasn't like one of the X-Men or something?
I mean, they didn't really talk about the X-Men, I think.
I mean, they did go to a barbecue at the X-Men's because Wolverine was Australian.
Was that part of the Spider-Man's Amazing Friends? That was where,
yeah, they went to the X-Men's house, and the Danger Room went crazy. And I forget who was behind it.
Is this possibly a Randy Fever dream?
No, I remember watching it because, like, you know, like, any possibility of an X-Men something in the 80s was amazing, even though, yes, weirdly, Wolverine was Australian. The other slightly weird thing about that
was the actual other thing, too.
I believe it was slightly before Australia became a big thing.
It was.
It was like it somehow predicted it.
So it was called The X-Men Adventure. Good title.
Yeah.
It was directed by Don Jurwich, written by Michael Reeves of the Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, yeah, that is a...
And yes, it. I'm looking to see. Cyclops was in it. Colossus. Aunt May, of course. Famous X-Men Aunt May. And yes, I'm trying to see if there's... They battled a cyborg.
Of course.
So yes, Spider-Man is trying out the Danger Room, and things go wrong when a strange intruder named Cyberiad shows up.
Siberia.
It turns out he is Firestar's former boyfriend, and he blames her for his current state. So I think she was a mutant.
Maybe that's where I know that, like, as soon as they introduced her in the comics, they made her a mutant.
Yes. I'm just saying, has Siberia been used ever again?
No, I don't believe he has.
He sounds like a good example of toxic masculinity. So maybe it was a little predictor of what were we talking about?
Who knows.
Spider-Man and Firestar.
Oh, I was talking about the desperation of kids in the 80s for anything related to a franchise that they liked. And I watched Droids and I tried Ewoks. I was like, I want more Star Wars. The movies are done.
Yep.
They're never going to make another Star Wars movie.
Yep.
So I might as well try and watch this cartoon. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, there's one novel called Splinter of the Mind's Eye, and that's all we're getting.
Yep. Time to retire Star Wars.
Today, people don't know how lucky they are to have a toxic fan base attacking you over all the movies.
Yeah, to be able to write off that every Star Wars conversation you have with somebody begins with, well, I like this stuff, but I don't like this stuff.
Uh-huh.
That's how it always has to go. Back in the day, you didn't have that option.
No, you liked the three Star Wars movies and the novel.
Right, and that was it. And if you had to talk trash about something, it was Droids and Ewoks cartoons.
Yes, and the holiday special.
And the holiday special.
Yeah. And even then, you'd be like, Boba Fett was cool.
Yeah.
Anyway. that was a tangent.
You know.
We don't have a lot of topics today, guys, so it's going to be like this. It's just going to be
Randy, we just lost our audience of three people.
Russell's still there.
We have an audience of, like, 15, at least.
Oh, that's exciting. I do hear people, I've had some people come in the store, and they pick stuff up.
Yep.
And they talk about things that we were mentioning.
We also got that Unlock display, so we've got the Unlock games, including the new one, the Legendary Adventures, which has a Sherlock Holmes... Mm-hmm. And a Robin Hood adventure in it.
A reminder, if people don't know what Unlock means, it's the escape room games.
Yeah, escape room games.
That's the big brand.
Looks like a Death Race 2000,
yes, it looks like,
but I don't think it actually
is.
It's
not called Death Race 2000, but it clearly is a Death Race 2000. Anyway, looks cool. There's also, if you wanted to try out the Unlock games and you've never tried them, we have a free little mini one that is like Man in the Iron Mask themed. All you gotta do is come up to the counter and say, hey, I heard about this in the podcast. Can I get one of them free Unlock games?
Is that starring Leonardo DiCaprio?
It does not star Leonardo DiCaprio. Well, I don't know. I haven't actually looked. But if you open it Jumanji style, Leonardo DiCaprio will appear in your room and guide you through the world of Unlock.
Wasn't that Leo, John Malkovich? Who else was in that?
I don't know.
Oh.
All I know is that it sounded like a cool little set up until you said that it had Leo in it.
Because you don't like Leo.
Leo will appear like a genie. He will grant you three wishes, and then he'll help you with your Unlock game.
I like it.
And then he watches What's Eating Gilbert Grape with you on an old DVD he's got.
And then while he watches it, he gives it that pointy finger thing he had going in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's in all the memes.
Yes.
Can you watch The Beach instead?
The Beach, wow.
Deep cut. I don't know.
Anyway, we also got the D&D Nolzer's Wave 18. Those are the miniatures.
Right. I'm going to forget all the things, but they had some more of those. The rabbit men. The
Herringon.
Herringon. Yep.
Don't call them rabbit men. They don't like that.
It's too late. It's out there.
I learned that in the D&D annual this week.
It's true.
And let's see.
Nothics.
There's some things.
Monodrone.
Monodrones, yep.
The Nothics are there's a Nothic featured in the D&D starter set, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, yeah.
The Minds of Phandelver. Yep. So it's always handy to have more of those guys running around Nothics, because that's like a good adventure. Demons.
They're kind of wizard experiment kind of thing.
Okay.
But here's the thing: the Nothic in the pre-painted one looks like this weird little gremlin-y creature.
Yeah.
These have like abs and stuff. They look like himbo Nothics.
I'm not liking the direction of this.
I like the himbo Nothics. I actually thought that they look pretty cool. Actually, I thought a lot of these. There's a new Beholder, the Variant Beholder, that's like blinded and has its eye stalks cut off. And
yeah,
it's cool.
We don't know what the deal is with that one, but
he's
seems interesting.
He's a sad Beholder.
Sad Beholder.
I mean,
there's the Yeth Hound.
Yeah, the Yeth Hound. It's like a hound with a werewolf man's face.
Yeah,
face.
But like a 1950s werewolf.
Yes,
specifically.
There's the.
It's like when Michael Landon was a werewolf.
Yes. The Aarakocra get to shine, the bird people.
Aarakocra paladins.
Yep. Yeah, there's some cool stuff in this. There's also like an alternate like fire giant. I forget what else.
There's a rowboat.
There's a rowboat.
There's more skeletons. There's more zombies.
Yep. The fire giant looked cool.
The fire giant did look cool.
Anyway, all cool stuff.
Yep.
Yes.
And Heroclix. Oh, no. As we record this, so as you listen to this on Wednesday, we'll have the D&D Miniatures Monsters of the Multiverse set. It's the new mini set. With a crazy, Neo-Illithid thing, like the big star creature.
Oh, yeah. It looks cool. It looks like a Stranger Things boss.
It does look a Stranger Things boss.
I need to look at this.
It is dope looking. It is a weird Lovecraftian looking monster. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk news. We don't have a ton of news, but the news we have is probably going to cause some discussion.
Huh?
The first one, let's talk about Heat 2 is out. Not a movie, not a sequel to Heat.
But it is going to be a movie.
But it is a sequel. Oh, and it's a novel right now.
Yeah.
Michael Mann with a co-writer whose name I forget.
Yeah, some lady, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to just go out on a limb and assume that everybody here knows the movie Heat, one of the great crime movies of all time. If you haven't, you're going to want to go watch that tonight.
Yep.
It is a big, sprawling crime drama that's a kind of one of those classic sort of stories of, like, half of it told from the perspective of the cops and half told from the perspective of the robbers.
Yep.
It's just that it's so well done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one good scene after another. It's the director, Michael Mann, at his peak. He's done a lot of crime movies, but he also did, like, The Insider and Last of the Mohicans and stuff like that.
It was famously Al Pacino and Robert De Niro's first movie together.
Yep.
Actually, their first movie together was Godfather 2.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah,
but this time they were in the same place.
That's right. They were kind of separate scenes.
Because Robert De Niro is time displaced.
That's true. He was a time traveler in Godfather 2.
As I understand.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
Yeah.
And it is like powerhouse performances from them. A number of famous scenes, but most notably the diner scene between them.
But it's also got a great cast overall. Danny Trejo's in it.
Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer.
Yep.
Charlize Theron. Is it Charlize Theron as
Mann's
wife?
No, it's...
it's Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd.
Yeah.
Tom Sizemore.
Dennis Haysbert.
Dennis Haysbert. That's the name I was looking for.
Yeah. It's just a ton of great character actors. It's actually sometimes Natalie Portman's in it.
Yeah,
she's the depressive daughter of.
She's the baby in this.
She is. It was like right around the time of The Professional. Anyway, super good movie. Its merits are known. It's like it's pretty much a legendary movie at this point.
Yeah.
And you can find podcasts out there talking about it and stuff too.
Sure.
And it ends, I'm going to say, rather definitively.
Yeah.
Not everyone makes it out alive. I don't want to say what all happens, but about half the cast might be gone by the end of that. Also, by the way, it has the best bank robbery in probably film history.
Oh, fantastic.
I just can't imagine anybody beating it.
Did he base that on a real LA robbery?
No. Well, actually, it was several elements in it were loosely based on real life, but that particular one, what you might be thinking, was like a year or two after Heat came out. Some robbers tried to imitate
it. Copycat
and
it?
Actually
oh, wow.
had a shootout in the streets like they did. I think it was kind of grim, but I think they, like, all the robbers, I think, got killed, and a few random bystanders, I think, did too. But it was bad.
I think if I were a robber, I don't think that's the part I would imitate. I would imitate some successful stuff.
Yeah, well, the whole original goal of that was, of course, to not have a shootout in the movie. It's just that things went a little awry. But anyway, so Michael Mann has I listened to an interview with him recently, and he explained when he writes scripts and stuff like that, he kind of has he knows the characters from top to bottom. He knows their whole history, even if you're only going to see a little slice of it for the movie. He's one of those guys. He loves to do research and stuff like that. Heat 2 is a terrible title, by the way. But it's a novel he has written that is both a sequel to the movie. It follows some of the characters who are not dead yet. And flashes back to the early days. Like, you will see Al Pacino's cop character when he was, like, in Vietnam and stuff like that. I don't know if you're going to, like, say, like, see De Niro's character when he was, like, in prison, you know, learning to, you know, when he was kind of, like, getting, you know, when he did other jobs back in the day. I don't actually, like, know what the premise is. Like, I don't know what the main storyline is.
So I saw a little log line.
Okay.
Like, and it said that Chris is on the run after Heat, and he is hiding out in Koreatown.
I did see that,
and is wanting to, like, get, and he's wounded, and he's wanting to get out.
Yep, yep.
So if it's about, like, that, him on the run, that's an interesting story.
Yeah. He was it's funny because he was, you know, supporting character in it, but all those characters are kind of sketched in memorable ways.
Yeah.
I got this. I bought a copy for a friend as a present for my friend Jimmy for his birthday. I have not gotten it for myself, but I will be sorely tempted. I will probably nab a copy. What about Nick?
I am also curious.
You going to read it?
Yeah, I'll probably read it.
Randy?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm a little trepidatious on... I don't know if Michael Mann has ever written a book.
But I don't think he wrote this one. I think the author is the woman. I think he's, like, helped write it. But I think that the writing...
He sounded pretty hands-on when he talked about it in the interview. Okay. But he also didn't, like, discuss the division of labor.
Yeah.
I will say this: you have watched movies written by him. Like, Heat was written by him. Yeah. So.
No.
But yes, you write prose?
There's a difference between script and
prose. For sure. I have this feeling he's one who can make the transition pretty well. Apparently, Tarantino did a pretty good job with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I know some people who love that book.
Yeah, I couldn't get into it, but
I really liked it. But I listened to the audiobook, and also it is super self-indulgent, like, even by Tarantino standards.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it, so, yeah. All right, the other news.
Yeah.
You may have heard a little bit about this on the internet. HBO Max, Discovery has a... Discovery chairman, Zaslav, I think is his name.
Yeah.
Zaslav. He has taken over Warner Brothers, and he's been putting his stamp on things. He's a guy who made all his money on reality TV. And this may not be a good thing. And the first sort of warning sign we have is that he canceled or... They're not going to release the $90 million Batgirl movie that they made.
Right.
Because I guess they're not entirely done with reshoots, and he's like, no more throwing good money after bad. And so they're
basically, the indication is that they think it was going to, like, flop or something like that.
What he's saying is that it wasn't up to the snuff, but that that he's very excited. He wants to do what Marvel did with the DCU, and that all sounds great. But then he's like, but we're very excited about the Flash movie, and I'm like, okay, hold up. Like, It's interesting that the one they canceled is the one that features a woman of color in the lead. I think a trans director, and the people who wrote the Harley Quinn movie, which is probably the best thing DC's produced.
Not a trans director; it's the directors who did.
Okay, so it's a trans woman writing or something.
Must be because I forget their names, but the guys who did Bad Boys for Life.
Guys who did Bad Boys for Life, yeah. But anyway. This movie, regardless of whether it was going to be good or not, I bet by DC standards it would have been fine. And it's weird to, like, cancel a $90 million movie at that point. Because what they're going to take is, like, a $15 million tax write-off.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate just for a moment. Okay. And not taking the stance of I agree with the move. But he comes in. I assume Warner Brothers has lost hundreds of millions of dollars point.
Yeah.
Because all their stuff got put on streaming.
Yep.
During COVID, none of the theaters made money.
Yeah.
None of those movies made money. So they're definitely in the red.
Yeah.
I mean, completely.
Sure.
So they're looking for any tax write-off they can get. I don't understand the idea of, like, I spent this $90 million, but now I get to not spend it because I'm going to shelf something. I don't get that. Just because I don't understand tax write-offs and stuff like that to the extent. But, I mean...
There's a great Seinfeld bit about that, by the way, just a quick aside.
Yes, I know, it is. It's a great one. I understand the need to recoup some money. You have to placate shareholders and want to do all that other stuff.
Sure.
So, just devil's advocate.
Sure, no, here's the thing. I understand that he came in and he's like, oh, you know, wanting to change direction and wanting to say, okay, we need to stop putting more movies on streaming and all that kind of thing. You have spent $90 million on this movie already. Yeah. Throw another $10 million at it and finish it.
It's in post. It's literally doing, it's like... It's
done. That's the stupidest... Basically, there's no reason. The reason they're doing it is to get the tax write-off, and he's basically like, we're not going to make $15 million releasing this to streaming. And I think that's a dumb... Or, like, selling it online. Like, you can't just sell it.
I also find it, like, really... in bad taste that he basically just axed it without informing talent.
Yeah.
Ahead of time. Right. And I feel like that was like the shittiest move ever. I think you take day or two. You said
he like comes from reality TV stuff?
Well, he owns Discovery.
He is, yeah. Discovery, but also like, I mean, crap. Reality crap is what he does.
Well.
This is the thing. I think he says one thing, but I think what he's seeing is, let's make it all cheaper.
Maybe.
But then they're also doing, like, you know...
He's also said that he's going to be spending more money on HBO Max on stuff. So there's conflicting articles out there saying one thing and then another one saying another.
As putting your stamp on things, though, this is not a great first move.
Yeah, I saw Kevin Smith basically saying, he's like, whatever else, he's like, it's a bad look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
when Kevin Smith is the voice of reason.
Oh, God.
Actually, Kevin Smith is often a fairly canny person and a decent assessor. Maybe not of the movies they get snuck to in premieres, because he will just love everything you put in front of him.
Well, you guys know me. I don't like to say a bad word about DC, especially not their film division. I am a positive, sunshiny guy when it comes to DC's films.
Honestly, DC's films and television is kind of a mess.
It's a nightmare, yeah. They need to clean up. I just feel like this was your first move. Because I think if he wanted his first move, if he wanted to make a good impression, would be to come in and say, we're canceling The Flash. Ezra Miller's a nightmare. We're not going to put that movie out.
You know, the thing about that, I can understand them sticking around for that one, not on the basis of his private behavior, which that is beyond their control. Like, they hired this guy like 5-6 years ago. Probably did not know that he was a complete insane person. Sorry, they were a complete insane person. And and clearly in need of treatment. Like substance abuse and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
But if my understanding is Flashpoint is intended to set the stage for like a whole new sort of DC wave. Doesn't it? It has like, that's the thing they got Michael Keaton for, right?
They
already replaced Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton was supposed to be in the Batman movie, too.
They were going to be...
Or Batgirl?
Batgirl. They clearly decided to not go
that
way. Well,
they brought Ben Affleck to shoot a scene.
Yeah. So they clearly decided not to do that.
Yeah.
And it feels a little bit like slip-sliding back toward the Zack Snyder stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I honestly... If Zaslav had said, okay, we're just getting... We're
scrapping everything.
Scrapping everything.
Yep.
Yes, that means we're getting rid of, I'm sure, a $200 million The Rock-led Black Adam movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard rumors that it has not done well in, like...
Well, it looks like crap.
Well, yeah, I agree. But it's gotten the same score that Batgirl did on its, like, pre-screenings.
But Rock is a major movie star, and you need to be in... So, that's the thing. It has the stink, for me, of picking on people who can't defend themselves.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, you don't want to upset your big movie stars, but this is a place you can cut $90 million. You can't, though. You cut, like, 15. Like, the 90 is gone. That's the thing I don't understand.
No, because when you put it, if you say you and you write it down in your ledger, you get the $90 million back, right?
You don't, though. You don't get that back. That money's gone. So, yeah.
But it's there. It's in...
That's the thing. It speaks to someone who... Whatever his plans, I don't think they're going to be good for comic book fans. I think he's like, he's not coming in and being like, yeah, we're wiping the slate clean, we're going to get a Kevin Feige type, we're going to relaunch the DCU.
He has outright said that he wants to copy Marvel.
He has. But then he also is like, I think we've got a good tentpole in The Flash. And I'm like, no, you don't. I promise you don't. Because even if it's great, imagine Robert Downey Jr. had kidnapped some kid.
Yeah.
That's not... the end of the MCU. Like, you can't tentpole a thing around someone who's that toxic.
Randy, would you be ready to for the MCU to be canceled, say, on the eve of Endgame, if that came out about Robert Downey?
Oh, God, that would have sucked, but yeah.
Just, when there's so many pieces in motion, sometimes I have to do these movies are more than the sum of just one person, you know?
Yeah, but they're the star of the movie.
Right. But the character they are portraying... has been filmed and you know, exist as a separate entity.
Yeah,
but I don't know. After this movie, because he's going to be replaced.
Yeah, they definitely can't reuse Ezra. So if Flash is a huge hit, which it won't be, because it's going to be crap, like everything else DC's made.
Too bad, because Morrison will have had a hand in it.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, Morrison's been working with Ezra Miller.
did Morrison get them addicted to every substance known to man? They didn't realize that only Grant Morrison's godlike constitution has allowed him to ingest every hallucinogen in existence and still function.
Yeah.
And thrive.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels like there was a way to do this. There was a way to come in and say, hey, HBO Max is losing money. This doesn't make any sense to me. We're not going to release this on HBO Max. Or this is the last movie we're making for HBO Max.
In an already messy situation, he came in and messed it up even more, yeah. Which just doesn't seem possible.
That's the thing. Is like this. It's a bad look for someone who is the head of this. This is the first thing that people are going to attach their name to.
Yeah,
and it's this.
I mean, I would love to see the Batgirl movie somehow, but
I don't think we're ever
going. Yeah, I don't think we are.
Because they can't take the tax write-off if they ever release it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It could leak still, although I don't know if it's produced post-production enough to
be dead. People talk about the Deadpool thing.
Yeah.
Deadpool was canceled.
And then they Ryan leaked the footage. And the other guy leaked it.
And it got made, and it became a huge hit. I don't think that Batgirl's going to follow that route, but it is possible. Anyway, I don't know.
Never say never.
But at any rate, not great.
No, it really isn't.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, August 10th, and there are a lot of new first issues this week, and some notable stuff, including one of the store favorites comes back with the Deceased War of the Undead Gods, number one.
Yeah.
So, turns out this is a trilogy.
Yep.
Tom Taylor says it's always been a trilogy. This is the fifth miniseries in the trilogy.
But I guess what he meant was there's sort of the main ones, and he wasn't... There's a few of the miniseries he was counting as side series.
Yes, well, I mean, that makes sense. Unkillables takes place the same time as the main one.
Yeah.
And the other one was like a bunch of digital shorts that they tied into it.
This is the one that follows the heroes.
At World's End, I think, is what the other one was called. Sort of.
Yeah.
Those are all part one. And then Hope at the End of the World or something is.
Yeah.
Like, and then this is the third part.
But it's DC's zombie comic. It's. I think we would all say that we find it superior to, say, Marvel Zombies.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think most of us put it pretty high up on our... Like, this is a must-read. We recommend this to everybody.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very approachable. It's really good. It's dark, but not grimdark.
Yep.
And this current series, they've already had some space stuff, but this is going to prominently feature, like, Green Lanterns, New Gods, Darkseid as a zombie, stuff like that is a big part of it. And it looks like Supergirl is going to play a major role in it, slightly rethought version of her origin. Is it giving away too much to say her slightly revamped origin?
No, it's in the first couple pages.
She's sent by Jor-El and Lara to...
Not Jor-El and Lara,
the people on...
Her parents.
What's her city?
Kandor.
Kandor.
Yep.
They send her to New Genesis.
Yep. Where things have gone awry.
Where things have gone awry because of the zombie stuff, right?
Yes.
Is she just, like, in this world, she's not, like... She arrived what seems like maybe a little later than in the DC Prime universe.
Correct.
Essentially zombies running amok. And then there's also a bunch of, you know, ongoing stuff, major events happening with the core characters from the previous miniseries.
The big thing, this is a spoiler for the second DC's mini, but there is a cure for the zombie now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is all about them trying to use that cure.
Yeah.
Which leads to some very cool stuff.
And some people can get resurrected, but also some people can't, and that's where some of the dark stuff happens. Like, if you got your body got incinerated or something like that, bye-bye.
You can't come back.
Right? No coming back.
Whoopsie.
really, really good first issue. What is this, six-issue series?
Eight. I think eight issues.
Oh, it's a puffy series.
Yeah. Well, it's the
end. It will be the finale?
Yeah, that's okay.
Until the side series that comes out.
Yes, until Deceased, one more go. Yeah,
it doesn't
look, Tom Taylor can write Deceased as long as he wants.
It's true, he can.
Tom Taylor also has a Superman Son of Kal-El out this week, which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good series. It's Tom Taylor Tuesday.
It is.
We always like a good Tom Taylor Tuesday. There is a new Predator comic. This was delayed, and I wonder if they delayed it to get it in time for Prey.
It's possible. Like, it seems fitting that they come out within a week of each other.
So this is Marvel's first take in Predator. They had gotten Aliens previously and Star Wars before that. They're slowly retaking all the Dark Horse comics.
Yep, and Conan before that.
Written by Ed Brisson with art by Kev Walker. It's a good creative team.
Yep.
And without going too much into it, the lead character is a human character who has a unique experience with Predators. And I really liked this.
I did too.
I thought, and it's interesting, it takes place in 2256, and the opening thing definitely implies that, like, all four Predator movies happened. Everything from Predators to the Shane Black Predator are referenced here. This is the Predator stuff is in continuity.
I don't know if I like that.
I wasn't sure about it either, but the way to describe it, like, none, the idea of it is not bad. It's maybe the execution was bad on all of them. But idea of them is not bad.
Yeah, this is what I call the Star Wars prequels problem.
Yes.
I haven't read it yet, so I will defer to y'all.
Well, I was a big fan of Kev Walker's artwork in there.
Yeah, really I like it too.
What's Kev Walker known for?
Thunderbolts he did.
Didn't he work a little bit on Annihilation?
He might have, yes. I think it's where we first saw him. He's done a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, that seems like if I were them, I would have waited until the movie Prey had come out too. And if you are riding high on that, this is a logical follow up.
Yeah, it's a good first issue. Also, y'all know Gail Simone likes to troll people, right?
Yes,
right. She and we should say troll in quotes because there's always these ridiculous fun trolling things like
her Cyclops uses heat beams.
Yes, yes.
She posted a thing about Prey. And she was like, I can't believe they forgot about the Predator's acid blood. Don't they know that's canon?
she's just begging for, like, the, what do you call it, the mansplainers to make asses of themselves.
Yep, yep. Yeah, that was great. Image has a couple new books this week. They have The Deadliest Bouquet, which is about, I think it's sisters?
It's, a group of three sisters, Just based on what little I know from the solicit, I think their mother was like a hunted down Nazi war criminals, and they somehow inherited.
Yeah,
but I don't know what the tone is. Is it comedic, slightly tongue in cheek, super
sharp? It's dark, crimey stuff.
Okay,
yeah, and then they have Love Everlasting is Tom King's first Image book with art by Elsa Charretier.
Yep,
and the artwork is gorgeous. It has that sort of Darwin Cook, Michael Cho animated style to it. And it is a homage to the classic romance comics, but there seems to be sort of like a delusional element to it or a cycling time limit to it. I don't know exactly what's going on, but it's like it's an interesting first issue. There's also Image has 8 Billion Genies number 4 out this week. If you've been reading that, that's continues to be really good. Marvel has a bunch of stuff this week. There's Ghost Rider Vengeance Forever.
It's a one-shot, right?
Yep. With three different Ghost Rider stories. There's a story of Danny Ketch. There's a story of the original Phantom Ghost Rider, which I think is a new update.
Okay.
And then there's a story of the... I see Robbie Reyes appears in it. Vengeance, the sort of darker 90s Ghost Rider.
Is that what they call him?
Yep. His name is Vengeance. And then...
That's Danny Ketch?
No, he was one of the other characters.
Oh, okay.
He's like a completely different character.
Yep.
He's got a purple skull.
Yep.
Is he a bad guy?
Yeah.
Is he like his Venom?
Yep.
Okay. He's in it. Anyway. If you like Ghost Rider, there's a bunch of Ghost Rider stories.
Dark Protector Returns.
There's two of these little team-up books they're doing. Miss Marvel and Wolverine by Jodie Houser, which Nick and I both read... Has the feel of a throwback to an old Marvel 2-in-1.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. The writer captured, I felt, like a really good version of Kamala Khan.
Yep.
I like that they reference like Champions in there.
Clearly a Kamala Khan fan, because Jodie has a reference to that. She referenced her...
You're talking about the current incarnation of Champions where Kamala was on the team.
Yeah, where...
Well, and also she met Cyclops.
But the young time-displaced version.
Yep. And she mentions Wolverine. She's like, oh yeah, I teamed up with him early on. Like, it definitely feels like a love letter to Miss Marvel. And also, there's Krakoa stuff in it.
There's Krakoa stuff. There's fun X moments. There's just some cool stuff in there.
And then Avengers and Moon Girl is the second of the Moon Girl one shots, teaming up the girl who has a pet dinosaur with Captain Marvel and the other Avengers.
As Moon Girl continues to search for Devil Dinosaur.
Or missing dinosaur.
Yep.
Oh no.
Yep. Has been stolen and clones of him are running amok.
Yep.
I like that.
Yeah. It's a fun story idea.
The Gwen Stacy miniseries, which got cut short, has been... They finally collected the whole thing. It's Christos Gage writing and Todd Nauck on art.
Well, it also has the final issue in it.
And so it has the final, like, two or three issues that were never published.
Oh,
so basically, this is like one complete story for, what is it, $12? $10. $10 gets you the entire Gwen Stacy story. It's surprisingly good. It's like, there's a little bit of action. Her dad's a police commissioner. I see Green Goblin. I see the Crime Master, all this stuff. But it is basically a story. I see the X-Men. It's Gwen Stacy's story.
Is Firestar in it?
Yeah. Firestar is not in it, but I can tell. There's a Dungeons & Dragons annual, a new one-shot from writer Jim Zub, who's done the best Dungeons & Dragons stuff, introducing a new rogue character with ties to the Fae, and a Harrigan rogue. And it's a tie into the Wild Beyond the Witchlight module.
Yeah, the Witchlight Carnival.
Yeah.
Which I have known nothing about.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really cool setting to.
It's like
has a lot of possibilities.
It's like a creepy and cool Mystic Carnival that comes from the Feywild and appears in the material realm or whatever. And, you know, I assume there's. I haven't read this yet, but Randy, I assume there's like weird creatures and changelings and dangerous deals that can take you back to the Fae and magic items that are rare and unique and all that stuff.
It was good. I really liked it. I'm hoping there is an owlbear.
Saw that.
So I'm hoping that they do more with these characters because I think they're good.
It's original characters. It's not the characters from the other comics.
Characters. Yep.
No Men's Can Boo.
No Men's Can Boo.
Nope. Boo.
Terry Moore released a new book called Parker Girls. He's going back to the sort of crime ring, crime/prostitution ring.
Yep. That's all women run.
All women. Yeah. That's at the center of Strangers in Paradise.
Right.
It's more of its crime.
His breakout book from the 1990s. Is like at its core was kind of a romantic triangle, but
no, the crime stuff,
there was a heavy backdrop, increasingly so, of the crime background of one of the characters, and it has like crept up here and there. Characters here and there have shown up in one or two of his other projects, which especially in his like a weird shared multiverse thing, which I did enjoy, and this is a focus on them. This is. What would you call it? The first issue. Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but it involves a guy who's gotten some bad news, running into one of them on a beach and having an interesting conversation, striking up a possible friendship, maybe something more that could be mutually beneficial for both. And there's some interesting twists and turns in it. And I think, Randy, you and I think both liked it. It reminded us, Terry Moore can bring it sometimes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this, and it made me want to go back and finish Strangers in Paradise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like his art, too, and it's just, it's one of those issues where, one of those first issues where I feel like it did exactly what I want in a first issue.
Yeah.
The art had room to breathe. The story, the characters were, you know, front and center with a story that was intriguing and, you know, not difficult to, you know, you're not going to lose track of it because if there's a large cast or anything like that. Sometimes writers get a little over their head. Terry Moore knows what's up.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Then we have Samurai Doggy from Aftershock, which very pretty art on this one.
Yeah,
but it's like a futuristic.
It feels like a futuristic love letter to, like, Samurai Champloo or something like that. Kind of like a anime-influenced about a doggy who is after someone
who
has
killed his mother and his other fellow puppies.
And stolen his...
that's right. Kidnapped his litter.
His litter.
No.
I will say, the first couple of pages...
It's
very dark and very... if you are animal lover, it is a little harsh... But it was a good read with fantastic artwork.
Oh yeah, for sure. I really dug it. And then let's see, we have an issue of Amazing Spider-Man, an issue of Punisher.
I still say Punisher is one of the best books.
Punisher's really good.
Jason Aaron's killing it.
And then there's a few trades this week. There's The Rush, which is from Simon Spurrier and is a vault comic. It looks like a sort of weird Western with a...
You're saying maybe, the publisher Vault, it's not literally a comic about vaults.
Not a comic from the vault. It's a weird Western where the bad guy seems to have a no face and ride a giant spider.
Okay. That old trope.
That old trope. there is a new book from Magdalene Visaggio and Andrea Muti called Cold Bodies that is about... It's a meta 1980s meta-horror homage focusing on how trauma affects victims of slashers and never leaves decades later.
Yeah. Huh? I'd like to read that. I wish Magdalene Visaggio booster number one, Anna, was still here so she could chat it up.
James Stokoe's Orphan of the Five Beasts,
mm-hmm.
Which is his weird martial arts. This was super fun. I'm looking forward to reading now it's completed. Stokoe always has gorgeous artwork. And this was a... Orphan of the Five Beasts is like a sort of samurai tropes. There's like five martial arts masters who have taken over villages, and this one guy is going in to take them on. Black Sad, which if y'all don't know, is anthropomorphic crime stuff.
It's like this very elaborately drawn European noir comic with a cat guy detective, right?
Yep. I read the complete that has the first three graphic novels in it. It's fantastic. It's really good.
They're legit good crime stories, and the guy's art is like through the roof good.
Yep.
Like he draws the coolest looking characters. There's gazelles and alligators, and
it's like if Zootopia wasn't done by Disney.
Yeah. It's like serious Zootopia crime noir. Any given volume of Black Sad you can pick up because it has like either a standalone mystery or sometimes maybe one or two in there. And I have not read this one yet, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you could probably grab this one as a first as well.
Oh yeah, and this is new. This came out in 2021.
That's cool because I think there'd been a bit of a gap before that.
Newly translated. There's going to be the second part, so I'm very excited to read some more.
If you're curious at all, by the way, just Google it. It looks like the word black and sad together.
Yep. You can look at that art.
Just look at the art. Oh my god.
Yeah. And then Star Wars Rebels, a big giant $30 tome of what, 15, 40 something stories?
Yep.
Printed, like, 41 Disney, stories.
What was their little insider
Disney Adventures
magazine?
Or
Star Wars Rebels magazine and Star Wars Animation magazine.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, stories of all written by Martin Fisher, apparently. I'm guessing worked on this show.
Yeah, he did.
But this is a bunch of Rebel stories, and it's very cool looking. I missed one. I missed X-Men Legends.
Oh, yeah, X-Men Legends, which is Roy Thomas doing a kind of Wolverine and Hulk story, it looks like.
Okay.
I haven't, like, read this one, but it definitely kind of it seems to go on that bent.
All right. Anything else?
I don't think so.
No.
All right. Well, that's Comics of the Week. We'll be back in just a second, and we're going to talk about The Sandman... and possibly some other stuff, probably Gen Con. So I just got back from Indiana. I went to Gen Con for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And
what makes Gen Con Gen Con?
It's all the Gen.
Is it just like a big gaming board game convention?
It is a big giant. It's the one that was the TSR started way back in the day.
Okay, I've so it's like the most venerable.
It's San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Okay,
it's gigantic.
RPGs too.
RPGs too. Lots of RPGs. The convention center is big enough that my usual like 2,000 steps. I got 16,000 one day and 20,000. I think I walked a total of 20 miles across 2 days.
Wow.
They set up out front. They've got what they call the block party where they put a bunch of food trucks rotating in and out. So, like, there's like 20 different food trucks out there.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, the entire town gears up for it.
Does San Diego do that these days, too? Because if not, they should.
They don't, but they should.
Yeah, that's stupid not to.
I was weirdly enamored with the Card City that was being made.
Card Hala. So, I was going to talk about this. So, basically, what there is there's this thing out in the front of the convention center where they give you old, like, Magic, Pokemon, I swear, some, like, Marvel cards, some like, I forget what else I saw, like, old trading card games.
Yeah.
Games that have been, the World of Warcraft card game.
Okay, yeah.
So, and you fold them up, and they make these giant structures. And people go all, like, some people just spend the day there. Because you can go in, and you just make little folded cards, you make a little structure. And someone had built like a tower. I don't know if you saw that picture I said.
I did.
And it just grows over the course of like 3 days. Starts on that Thursday. Then on Saturday night.
How do these things not tip?
I don't know.
Or maybe they do sometimes.
Magic, Dave.
I guess. Do you stack the cards or does somebody who's good at stacking cards?
No, you stack the cards. You build everybody. There's like a bunch of people there building and you add on.
Okay.
But anyway, at the end of this, they've got this giant city made of cards. And they're folded cards. It's not like they're not going to.
Right, it's not that unsteady. Not,
yeah. On Saturday, starting at 10:30 at night, people can donate to charity, be the first to throw coins at it, and it all comes down.
That's so cool.
I did not get to see the destruction of it because I was at a burlesque show that was the D20 burlesque show. But that was kind of a cool thing.
Randy chose sex over violence.
I did say sex over violence. The D20 burlesque, by the way, was awesome.
Yeah.
It's a New York-based burlesque troupe. They had one person in from Indiana, one person from L.A., but mostly it was New York-based. There was a, I'm trying to think, oh, the, my favorite was the only person from Indiana did a Klingon.
Uh-huh.
She was dressed as a lady Klingon, complete with batleth, and did a Klingon, battle roar.
Oh, that's cool.
Burlesque show, which was great. the last act was a woman who did a Thanos, which was pretty fantastic. There was someone did a gender flipped Yennefer from The Witcher.
Witcher.
There was a couple different. It was very cool. I think there was another Marvel unit. Oh, there's a Doctor Strange. And there was what was the DC one that they did? I don't remember who the DC character was. Oh, it was Bane. It was this very big lady who did a Bane thing, which was awesome. It was very fun. It was a fun way to close out my Saturday, which was my last day there. I did not. So one of our customers has done this for years, and he books like 9 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day. Plays a bunch of role playing games, and like he has his whole show booked. That is not how I did it. I in fact did no RPGs because they were all like 4 and 5 hour sessions.
Right.
So mostly I went on the exhibit floor, which there's a ton of exhibitors there, and talked to them and got It's kind of like when we went to Gamma and I discovered Foam Brain Games and those Owlbear coins, some of those things. Like, basically wanted to find some new people to get products from.
Right.
And I did that, and we'll get some new stuff coming in the next few weeks. But I did play a few things. There was a deluxe version of Radlands, the game that we have. The deluxe version only comes with playmats, but I have a tough time resisting a deluxe edition. It's a... I've now played Radlands. It is a super fun, like, two-player card game, like a deck builder. Except it's not a deck builder, everybody has their own deck. But you're drawing out of a main deck and you're attacking these foundations. It's like post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
So you're attacking a town.
Fallout-y stuff.
And you have three cards that represent your town, and they're different each time and they have different abilities, and you're spending water as your resource to activate the abilities. You're sending your raiders out. It was super fun, and as I played it, we learned in the second game that what we'd been doing wrong. And sort of figured it out. There's a lot of depth to it.
Okay.
So it is a very good two player. I think it won the Dice Tower Award for best two player game.
Oh, that's cool.
And it would definitely worth a look. I think we've had it. It's a tricky one because it doesn't come from our main distributor. We always have to do a little work to get it. But if you're looking for a good two player game and you already have Star Realms, which we always recommend, Radlands is a good next step in that journey. I think.
Nice. That sounds cool.
I also picked up a couple things that I didn't realize were available in distribution. But that we have on order should be coming in later this week. But one of my favorite end of night games is a game called Deep Sea Adventure, which is basically a push your luck game where you're all trying to get treasures on the underground. You're sharing oxygen, and if you go down too far, you will drown everybody. But if you go up soon enough, you might be able to escape drowning, and you get the treasures worth points.
Okay,
it is a super fun push your luck game.
Yeah, it's fun.
They have one called Moon Adventure, which is a updated version of that. I got that, which we'll be getting in, and. There's a couple others. There's a rhythm game that they have too, where you're like putting down different rhythm cards and that kind of thing. So we'll have a couple of those coming in from that company. I played a game called Bird Watcher, which has a variety of birds. It reminds me of Wingspan, and it's pretty, but it's much quicker play. It plays in like 30 minutes.
Okay.
And it's sort of a set collection card game. It's coming from Renegade Press and Oni Press Games, and should be coming out soon. And I really enjoyed that. It was a lot of fun. I would definitely recommend that to people. I got to play Azul Master Chocolatier, which is coming out in November. It's the new Azul. It's basically like the first Azul, but reskinned for chocolate.
Okay.
I played a game called Yak that we just got, where you are The funny thing about Yak, you are all villagers in this village, and you're trying to build a structure of like a pyramid structure with little stones,
mm-hmm.
and you build up these plastic stones, but you get them by trading with these merchants who are riding around town on yak carts.
Okay,
and so there are three or four merchants, and each merchant doesn't deal in within one of the resources. So there's like milk and meat and bread. And if the guy in front of you, that you get one yak, one merchant in front of each turn. If the guy in front of you doesn't deal in bread, you can't trade him bread to get stones.
So a little bit of like Catan trading.
So a little bit of trading, yeah, but it's not trading with our players. You're trading with these little yak merchants. And then everybody has the same set of three cards that give you your actions, whether you're trading with a merchant, you're getting out of the farm that's in the center of town that has spillover goods, or you're building. And getting goods. And
how many
kind of
players
thing.
Is this?
It goes up to four.
Okay.
And the fun thing is, when you pull stones to put on the cart, there's a little white stone that represents fog. If you get fog, the yaks turn around and go the other way. So if you're planning on a certain yak coming your way, you can get screwed over that way.
Oh.
It was super fun.
I hate in life when I get a yak reversal.
A yak reversal.
A fog-based yak reversal?
Yes. There is nothing worse.
Not cool.
No.
Not cool, bro.
But that I think was one of those fun games that once you learn to play it would be a super fast, quick game, and it was a lot of fun. And also, it has little yak meeples.
Well, it had to.
Yeah. Also, got to see the Betrayal at House on the Hill, the new version of that.
Yep.
There's an expansion coming for it. Don't know the ETA on that. Discover that Betrayal at House on the Hill is not in distribution, but you can get it direct from Hasbro. So we now have a direct from Hasbro account, and we should be getting the new Betrayal later this week.
And maybe, and also a Baldur's Gate restock.
Actually, I guess it may be 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's going to take a little time to get to us, but we do have that on order.
The Betrayal at Baldur's Gate.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And another...
there, and then Marvel Mayhem, which is a Marvel version of the popular Dungeon Mayhem game.
Yeah, which I'm curious about. I heard nothing but good things about Dungeon Mayhem, so...
Yeah. The other thing I went to was a Dice Tower Live. Dice Tower is being like one of the reviewing sites for mm-hmm. games. Tom Vassell is the guy who's like the game. This was really fun to watch. It was a panel. It actually, I don't watch as much YouTube. I think both you guys watch a little more YouTube than I do. Dave watches definitely more YouTube than I do.
Yep.
But the gaming YouTube, that's how I learned to play games anymore, is go find those YouTube videos. And the Dice Tower was like, oh, I had to find time to like watch these guys each week because they were really fun. Their theme was five game turnoffs, and they each had a list.
Oh.
You know I like lists. And they did a five countdown of like things they didn't like, from like bad rule books, games that say they're semi-co-op, and they sort of went down the line of things that they thought were bad about games, which was really interesting to see.
Are these guys basically the same level of humor as like the Shut Up and Sit Down?
Yeah, these were all very funny people.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So I really liked that. I think overall my Gen Con impression is like I like BGG Con better.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just a room full of games, and you just play a bunch of games.
Yeah.
I used to play like 20 or 30. I played like 5 games, of course, at Gen Con. But Gen Con is like where you get the preview of all the stuff that's coming out. You see the exclusives, that kind of thing. It was definitely worth going, and I definitely, if you're a gamer, you might want to make the trip. It's just an expensive trip.
Yeah.
While I was at Gen Con, 100 different things got released.
That's true.
And the big one is probably Sandman on Netflix.
Ah, yes.
Which I had downloaded and watched most of on the plane, and watched the rest of it when I got home. So I've seen all 10 episodes.
I have two.
Dave?
2 episodes.
Okay.
But I'm familiar with the Sandman comic, so probably major spoilers.
Not really big spoilers.
Are going to be okay.
This essentially is the first 2 graphic novels covered here, right?
Yeah, it's Preludes and Nocturnes and Doll's House.
Who is the lead in Doll's House?
It's Rose Walker.
Rose Walker.
Okay.
But also the serial convention is in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought here's the thing. I like but don't love Sandman. I think the art's a little inconsistent. I think some of Neil Gaiman's, like, he really likes Fairy and British Boys Schools and a lot of the twee British stuff that is just not my thing. I'm not an
Anglophile. Isn't that stuff in this, too?
It is, but it's not the same extent.
Okay.
But at any rate, I thought that as an adaptation, this was phenomenal.
Yeah, it finds a unique and kind of... equilibrium or balance between Neil Gaiman's Britishisms and traditional TV storytelling that I thought is really, really unique. And I dug it. And
you know, I think it's that traditional TV storytelling that has me a little bit distant from it.
Really?
Yep. I felt like when I saw Do you say, is it Joanna Constantine? Is that how it's pronounced?
Mm-hmm. Or Constantine.
I was only asking about the Joanna part, actually. But yeah, Constantine. She sort of felt a little too CW Constantine for me. With some F-bombs dropped in that felt like kind of like cheap edgy to me. I guess I wasn't like... There was stuff I liked, but I wasn't like finding myself super super enthralled by it.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I don't get the CW vibes because nothing about it felt cheap to me.
I did think that it was like it was one of those where, you know, what I wanted. I think I wanted like indie movie sensibilities that were more like Robert Eggers or guy who made Midsommar. Who's that?
Ari Aster.
I think I wanted it to vibe more like that, and it was a little bit more approachable.
You know what's weird, Dave? I get that, because I actually think that's my one complaint going in. I thought it was going to be too Netflixy, like too lock and key boring. And I thought they did a good job. Like, it still feels like Sandman to me.
It does.
Well, but, I mean, it's first of all, like, is what I saw, and like there's definitely stuff I liked in it too. I liked a lot of the casting. It was actually extremely faithful in many cases. They, you know, lots and lots of lines right from the comic. Mm-hmm. You know, it had Cain and Abel. It had Gregory the Gargoyle.
Yep.
It had Goldie. Very specific, you know, the events that unfolded around, was it Roderick Burgess who captures him?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which I still think is like a very ingenious kickoff premise.
Yep. That's John Dee.
Their John Dee is
But he's a different John Dee from the comics,
it's the same character, but they tweaked it a little bit. He's got a different origin.
Yeah.
Right.
And the origin works. It does. Like, all of these things...
That's what I wanted to say, that they
had the hindsight 2020 thing where they can connect up the stories.
So the Corinthian is like the big bad in a way, and I thought it worked really well. By the way, they're Corinthian. I wasn't sure about him, but Boyd Holbrook is fantastic. Like,
he's amazing.
He's very charismatic, even as he's, like, being a psycho killer... You can see how charming he is.
He's got that Christian Bale, Patrick Bateman enthusiasm. Yeah.
I thought he felt like Patrick Bateman light.
Oh, really? Man, no, I liked him better.
But that said, I'm only two episodes in, so...
I think you'll see more of him as you go on.
We'll see, we'll see.
I thought he was fantastic. I thought their Lucienne was great.
The gender flip. Gwendolyn
Christie as Lucifer is amazing.
Yeah, she's really
good. Their death, like, I want much more... Like, I want them to actually do the death miniseries now, because she was so good in that.
Well,
I can easily see them choosing to do something that. It'd be interesting to do a side project like that, you know, essentially a sister series. No particular reason why they couldn't. You know, it'd be like when they would do... Oh, with Galactica, did they do, like... I'm trying to think. Did they do any other spin-offs of Galactica while it was still running, like...
No, they did Caprica.
Caprica was afterwards. They didn't Did they do a miniseries about the Pegasus? There was something. There was some miniseries.
Oh, there was a miniseries. I think there was, like, a three-episode miniseries.
So, yeah, it'd be... Like, Death could be something like that, only, you know, maybe good. Instead of like, the Galactica ones.
But I also like that, like, all the stuff that was in Sandman is still there in some fashion. Because even Joanna Constantine... has, like, John's backstory about what was his horrific event.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's still there.
Instead of doing John Constantine, they did Joanna, and it's like her descendant is also Joanna.
Right,
yeah.
And I thought
that made sense to do because, A, we've already had... I don't know what Gaiman's reason for changing was, but, A, that character already existed just in flashbacks in Sandman, and, B, John Constantine has had more screen time. He's had multiple incarnations kind of floating around at this point.
I mean,
everything from Keanu Reeves to multiple, you know, versions of his take on it.
They also did Lyta Hall.
Yeah, their Lyta Hall is interesting.
It is.
In fact...
How did they do that without...
So they
did Hector as well.
Hector's in there too, but they don't reference her being a superhero. So I think that's essentially they're not... She's a character, but she's not a superhero.
Yeah.
But I think she'll probably will get the Fury thing if they wind up doing kindly ones.
I think so.
They're definitely setting up... Like, you can tell Gaiman was involved because, you know, it's one of those things where if, like, an executive might have been like, why are we doing this? And then Lyta Hall is not in it, and then all of a sudden they get the kindly ones, they don't have this character set up.
Right.
All the setup is there.
Yeah, I mean, all the setup... is really well done because the stuff that happens in the first couple episodes that are kind of in like the background come full circle around, like the sleeping sickness that is caused by Morpheus's absence.
Yep.
Like deviates the for Rose Walker was supposed to be the Vortex is supposed to be his grand or her grandmother.
Yeah. There's also the casting over is spot on throughout.
Oh,
all the casting is amazing. But also, I think one of the things I have with the Doll's House, Gaiman would do these things that the Sandman was not the lead of the book for the most part.
Right. Yep.
And I think that was the biggest thing with Netflix is that, for the most part...
Well, it's tricky because he's a kind of an alien, distanced person.
Yeah. Morpheus is much more actively involved in this.
And what's his name? Sturridge?
Yeah, Tom Sturridge.
He is perfect.
Perfect. I would have said liked him to be a little more like deliberately pale the whole time.
Yeah,
but like the voice is good, the acting is good. He's perfect. He was one of my worry points, and I thought they did a great job.
I can't remember if it was in one of your thread that you did talked about it on Facebook, Randy, or someone else's. But I think somebody said they did makeup tests for him that were paler, and they found there's something about it looked weird. Yeah. Like you know, and I could believe that.
The thing is, like in the comics, I liked when Morpheus sort of stepped to the back, and you got these other stories. Like those are my favorite stories.
Mm-hmm.
But the Doll's House, I remember specifically being annoyed by how much time they spent on Barbie's fantasy world.
Yeah.
Like, it was a whole thing. And in this, it's just a background. Like, you don't need to see that whole story. It's just a background element. And I thought that was a good choice.
Exactly.
You wanted a CW superhero version of Sandman.
Yes.
Now, I am interested enough to press on with it, but it may be, you know, like, I'm also a person who sometimes is content to be like, oh, I'll just reread the original stuff or whatever.
Yeah. I loved this. It actually
But I have to be pretty impressed. Like, it's clearly going over well with a lot of people. A lot of thought has gone into it.
They do make changes from the graphic novel. I mean...
Yeah. I mean, some of it is, like, you know, taking out some of the DC superhero parts and, like, you know, even stuff on the edge and moving around the pieces.
One of the most notable changes, I guess, is the Hell battle.
Yeah.
Because in the comics, it's not Lucifer.
Right.
It's a demon.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. It's not...
demon does show up.
It does. But when you have Gwendolyn Christie playing Lucifer, you use her, is what Neil Gaiman said.
The way he said, you fucking use her. The way they did it was smart. And I thought it worked. Also... Patton Oswalt's Matthew the Raven is great.
Yeah.
They did a good job with that.
He's amazing.
Not a ton of Merv Pumpkinhead in this first season.
No, but...
But when he turns up, he's fun.
Yeah. I love all the dreams. Fiddler's Green.
Fiddler's Green is really well done. I forget his... Stephen Fry.
Yeah, Stephen Fry as Fiddler's Green is great.
Yeah. That seems like pretty good
casting. And they nailed the serial convention. They nailed.
Yeah, they did.
Everybody in that is good. The characters they cast were perfect. The guy they got to play Funland, somehow they found that guy... who looks exactly like the drawing, which is weird. I mean, I would not have expected that to have come through as well.
I will say, my wife has not watched or read a single Sandman book, knows nothing of it.
Yep.
She absolutely loved this.
Yeah.
So it's kind of has a reach of being able to get non-readers.
Well, I believe my sister, who has never read an issue of Sandman, has maybe watched the whole series or is close to finishing it.
She was like, when is season 2 coming? And I'm like, it hasn't been green.
Yeah, time to read the books.
Although, I have to imagine that the second season...
I think it's probably going to happen.
I would hope so.
Unless Netflix collapses.
Yeah.
Which I don't think.
I mean, Netflix has been having problems.
It's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was very impressed and I was skeptical.
Yeah.
So,
agreed.
Yeah. Alright. The other thing I want to mention was another Netflix show I watched, or movie I watched a few weeks ago. I was waiting to see if y'all were going to watch it, but you're not, so maybe I'll talk you into it.
Yeah.
So this is called The Sea Beast. It is a it's a CG animated one on Netflix.
Is this DreamWorks? No.
It is...
Or is this straight up just Netflix animation?
It might be DreamWorks. So
I've heard nothing but good things from people.
I was looking to see...
Whatever I knew about The Sea Beast, I've already forgotten.
So this is a guy who... He wrote Frozen and Big Hero 6 and worked on Moana.
Okay, pretty good pedigree.
He directed...
Big Hero 6, right?
Big Hero 6 and co-directed Moana. So, pretty notable.
The voice cast is amazing.
The voice cast is really, really good. So, the lead voice cast on this is...
Carl Urban.
And...
Jared Harris?
Yes, Jared Harris. Oh, I forgot there's Jared Harris, yeah. So basically, this feels a lot like How to Train Your Dragon.
Okay. I love How to Train Your Dragon.
This, I think anyone who likes the How to Train Your Dragon would like this. Basically, this starts in a sort of this town. There's a girl who's an orphan. She's in an orphanage. She's telling stories. Basically, there are these sea beasts, and for the longest time, there have been these sailors who go out to kill the sea beasts and keep them from raiding the towns. And her parents were one of those, and their ship crashed, and she died and was orphaned. And she was
okay. Orphaned.
So now she wants to stow away on this on the biggest ship there is. I forget the name of it. That's going after the biggest monster there is.
Hmm.
And that the second mate on that is Carl Urban's character. The main character, Captain Crow, is Jared Harris.
Who's Jared Harris?
You would know him from a bunch of stuff, but I'm trying to think what you would actually know him from.
Okay.
British actor.
Okay.
He literally is in everything.
Yeah. I know him most from Mad Men, but he's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
He was Moriarty in the Sherlock Holmes by Robert Downey Jr.'s.
Yeah, yeah.
She goes on this boat, and they soon discover that maybe the monsters aren't just monsters. And that's kind of the center of the story. It's got beautiful animation, cool pirate monster fighting sequences, and a sort of a really well thought out story about sort of the nature of power and story and who's telling you truths and that kind of thing. I really, really like this. It's funny. It's clever. It's good for kids, but it's got a solid message behind it, too. Reminds me of, like I say, How to Train Your Dragon, where the notion of, like, oh, they're not just monsters. There's something here. And I thought they did a good job with that.
I like stories like that. It feels kind of classic. There's a couple of animations hitting. I know on Apple they just put out Luck, which I really want to see because it has a fun idea. And then there's just... So much came out.
Lightyear came out.
Lightyear hit Disney Plus, which I really want to sit down and watch.
Same.
I know you're in the middle of watching Prey.
I'm in the middle of Prey, yep.
I want to watch Prey. I want to get in the mood of watching Prey.
Eat, Pray, Love.
Yes, Eat, Pray, Love. I've seen that meme floating around.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the
general... Not to mention that What We Do in the Shadows is still running. Harley Quinn is still running.
Yep. I watched the first two episodes of Harley Quinn.
It was really good.
It starts back up as good as it always is.
Yep.
I feel like there's some stuff hitting Friday or this weekend, too. I'm like, stop. this is the first time I think I've been behind in a while.
Yeah.
And I don't like this feeling.
Well, I haven't finished up the Orville. I'm behind on Evil. There's some stuff I need to catch up on.
Evil has been fantastic. Orville has really surprised me this season.
I heard it was a really good season. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. That will do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time.
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.